Hello and welcome to the Fitness Mindset Podcast with Kate Niedecker. So today I'm joined by someone who isn't just a coach in the industry who's experienced. They're so experienced in the industry that they have above 15 years experience coaching people in strength training. So I'm really pleased to have Megan Calloway come on the podcast and have a little bit of a chat today, because she really has a really fantastic set of beliefs about strength training and helping people. So Megan, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
No problem at all. So would you like to give the listeners a little bit of an idea of your background and why you do what you do, really?
Okay. Well, I've been a strength coach for over 15 years. I'm 38 now, so I have been doing it for quite a while. I've been an athlete for most of my life. In recent years, I have been focusing a bit more on online coaching. I've been writing, for example, my pull-up program, which we're going to talk about later. I just have the belief that fitness and training, it should be enjoyable, it should be empowering, and it should be something that fits relatively seamlessly into your lifestyle. So I like to teach people how to have fun, how to feel empowered while achieving their goals, and in a way that is very sustainable. So that's probably my biggest mission in terms of my training.
Yeah.
And I think I've kind of got over the years, I've gotten better. I mean, I've always been pretty good at explaining what to do, but then showing people what to do and in a way that gets them really excited and inspired.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is something I do quite well. And I, even in terms of the pull-up program, I think in part that is why it's doing as well as it's doing, because people are so excited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's something that, well, I've started the pull-up program. It's absolutely fantastically written. And it really does break it down so it's accessible to people. And I think when people look at a pull-up, they think, I'm never going to be able to do that. I'm never going to do that. And because you've broken it down so well for people and you've explained it to people so well, it does all of a sudden seem like a tangible goal that they could achieve. And that's really, it's really talented on your part to take something like that and help people with that so they feel excited about it. And what would you say in terms of people who would look at someone doing a pull-up in the gym and think, I would never be able to do that. Oh my God, like no way would I be able to do a pull-up in my life. What advice would you have for someone who might have those sort of like mental blocks towards like any strength training or in particular pull-ups?
Well, I mean, pull-ups are a pretty advanced exercise.
Yeah.
So what I will tell people, it's a more advanced variation of a fundamental movement. So, I mean, you could talk about pull-ups, you could talk about some of the kind of crazier exercises I might post online. And people think, oh, this is so crazy, I would never be able to do this. And so what I tell them is just a more advanced variation of a fundamental movement. Once you master the basics, I keep saying this, but the sky is the limit.
Mm-hmm.
So rather, like a lot of people, they kind of think, okay, they're going to skip from A to Z, and they wonder why they can't do a pull-up or whatever the particular movement may be. If you follow the plan of attack, whether or not it's a pull-up program, some other training program, stick to the basics and progress accordingly. Most people, I mean, maybe not most, but a lot of people will be able to do pull-ups or whatever exercise they want to do.
Mm-hmm. And I think as well, it can be one of these things that I mention a lot with clients, is that I say, okay, they say, oh, okay, I'm really struggling with this, I'm not making any progress. And I'm like, yeah, but are you testing all the time? You kind of like testing a pull-up and then not doing the foundation work underneath. And it's that kind of testing versus training aspects of it as well. And it's kind of taking the goal and breaking it down into more smaller realistic goals as you go along the way, which is obviously fundamental in going towards an advanced goal like a pull-up, for example. And I think one of the main things that people do when they do go for a pull-up is they try banded pull-ups. And what is your take on banded pull-ups for progression?
So they can serve a purpose if they're implemented correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And what I find most people do, they don't master the fundamentals first. I have other pull-up specific regressions I will introduce long before the band. These exercises, they help people develop grip strength, proper body positioning. They teach them how to control the movement of the shoulder and shoulder blades. develop the left, like the, I call it intentional rigidity around the hips and the spine. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people skip those key steps. They go right to the band. The band provides the assistance at the bottom. I mean, when most people don't need it, makes it very easy to disregard proper body positioning, bracing. So people get sloppy and they cheat.
Mm-hmm.
So the second they remove the band, or I mean, even try to use a band with a lot less tension, they wonder why they're not making any progress.
Mm-hmm.
So in my program, I don't introduce it until the third phase, just because it really forces people to master the basics first, implement the band after they've achieved all the other prerequisites.
Mm-hmm.
And with the band, your form should basically resemble that of an unassisted pull-up. You just have that slight bit of assistance.
Yeah.
So, and the band can be great for volume. So once people kind of have established a technical proficiency, lumbopelvic stability, all the other prerequisites, then the band can be very beneficial.
Mm-hmm. I really enjoy your answer as well, because I think a lot of the things that, especially on social media, and I do always bring it up on a podcast, is that there's always some coaches that say bands are hindering your pull-ups completely. You know, you shouldn't be using a band at all. And then there's some coaches that say, oh, bands are the way to go. And the thing is, it depends. It's neither that or that. It's getting the fundamentals right, like you say, and getting that foundation strength there, so you can progress and then actually use the band for volume as you carry on. So
exactly.
Yeah, so, and I think as well, one thing that I find in particular a difficulty for myself, it's something that I have to work around, and also some other coaching clients and people that I've spoken to, is if you do have longer limbs, some body weight exercises can be a little bit more difficult. Now, is this more so, is it a more mechanical problem, or would you say that it's actually more of a mindset, something's blocking you in the way and you need to just forget it?
I mean, if you're lit, like if your arms are longer, obviously the distance to the bar is going to be greater.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's going to hinder people that much. And sometimes people do psych themselves out.
Yeah, yeah.
So again, I think if people really master their form, even if their limbs are a little bit longer, yes, it's going to be a little bit tougher, mm-hmm. but it shouldn't make a huge difference. And so many people struggle to achieve their first pull-up or other exercises, not necessarily because they weigh more or because they have longer limbs,
mm-hmm.
but it can be how they're training for it. Their form might not be quite up to par. A lot of people, I mean, even in terms of form, they don't use the muscles in the back. They don't initiate the movement. By moving the shoulder blades in towards the spine, down towards the opposite hip, they just pull with their arms.
Yeah.
I mean, you see that all the time. So when people can really dial in on using the right areas, it makes such a difference. If they're able, if they have the core strength, lumbopelvic stability, if they can keep certain areas of their body more rigid,
mm-hmm.
it's going to make them much less prone to swinging. They're going to be much less prone to moving dead weight. So it will make the movement easier for them, mm-hmm. even if their limbs are longer.
Yeah. And would you say that core strength is going to be a massive fundamental key to helping with that as well, in terms of having that support?
Yeah, I mean, there might be the time, I mean, I'm kidding, but 1% of people, their upper bodies are so strong that they can just disregard what's going on from their chest down, and they can just pop. Oh, but I mean, even if they're doing that, their form isn't going to necessarily be the best. Mm-hmm. So for most people, I mean, pretty much everybody, and then especially if you want to introduce weighted pull-ups, being able to stabilize your hips and spine, keeping your body as rigid as possible, it allows you to really focus on the mechanics, and it does make the movement so much easier.
Mm-hmm.
So for pretty much everybody, I mean, I hate giving black or white answers, but mm-hmm. for pretty much everybody, having a strong core, being able to stabilize the hips and the spine, being able to control the movement with the shoulders and shoulder blades, that makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah, 100%. And for someone who is maybe been trying banded pull-ups and maybe they think that they're not really progressing in that way, what are some good core exercises that people could be implementing in their program that you recommend? Because obviously there's so many different views on core training, and what would you recommend?
Well, with pull-ups, because you want your body to be in a fixed position, mm-hmm. I mean, you don't want to have a lot of movement occurring. I prefer exercises that address core stability. I'm a huge fan of dead bugs.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of hollow body holds. And I mean, in the pull-up, your body is in a hollow body position, mm-hmm. or I refer to it as a slight hollow body position, because your legs, you know, in the hollow body, your body might look kind of more like a rainbow, or depending on how advanced you make the movement. Other people, when I do it, my legs are almost, they're maybe an inch or two above the floor max.
Yeah.
So I'm almost in more of a straight line.
Mm-hmm.
So I love hollow bodies. Planks can be very effective, but I'm into the shorter duration, maximal contraction, the planks that are done that way versus the long mindless hold where people think they can hold forever.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and would you say, what's your view on, for example, would you say that holding the plank for a certain amount of time is only going to get you so far?
Yeah, I mean, for most people, I don't recommend holding any longer than 30 seconds, and that is even very high.
Yeah.
I will often recommend 15 seconds, sometimes less.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had a new client who was in last week, and I asked her, with a lot of people, when I first see them, they'll tell me what they're doing, and I will ask them to show me how they perform that particular exercise. Then I can troubleshoot right away. It makes it very easy for me to assess them, to troubleshoot perhaps what they're doing wrong, what they're doing right, and then make it as effective as possible, as quickly as possible, so we can get the most out of the session.
Mm-hmm.
So she said she does planks for at least a minute long, and that she can hold for a long time.
Yes.
She can hold for much longer. So I showed her how I want her to do the planks. She ended up being able to do no more than 10 seconds, and she's like, wow, this is so much better.
Yeah. And
so I just find the shorter planks are more effective for most people.
Yeah.
And they're way more time efficient.
Mm-hmm. And would you say that that comes down to a lot with the positioning of, for example, the pelvis in the plank as well, and the shoulders? It's sometimes, if that's a little bit out, you can hold it in a certain way, but it's not exactly going to be using the right muscles, for example. So how would you say, what did you do with that client that helped them really feel it in the right way? I know it's very, very individual, but what are some common things, common mistakes that you see people making with planks, for example?
So a lot of people, they don't contract. When I talk about the core, I talk about all the muscles in the body aside from the limbs,
mm-hmm.
like all the muscles in the torso around the spine. So, I mean, a lot of people don't contract their muscles. They kind of literally just hang out.
Yeah.
So what I have people do, a couple tips that really work, you get them so they're in the right body positioning. Even if they're in the right position, if they're not contracting their muscles, they're probably still not going to get a lot out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So one subtle trick I really like, I mean, first of all, I have the people, or whoever I'm working with, I have them brace their core muscles. Some people, I'll tell them to brace as hard as they can. Others, it might kind of be more of a submaximal contraction. So I have them brace the core muscles. I have them squeeze their glutes. One trick, though, that is a game changer, mm-hmm. is I have people imagine that they're pulling their elbows down towards their feet.
Yes.
So without actually physically moving their arms. That forces them to tuck their ribs. The second they do that, it's almost like a light bulb goes off, and they feel their core muscles. Another mistake that a lot of people make is they mindlessly hang out on their shoulders.
Yeah.
They don't engage. So I have a lot of people, what I want people to do is to press their body away from the floor, and they protract their shoulder blades. So the shoulder blades move away from the spine. They hold in that position rather than kind of just mindlessly hanging out on the shoulders and shoulder blades and arms.
Mm-hmm.
And then if people are really advanced, what I will have them do, if they're not, I have them focus on the elbows towards the toes. But then if you also imagine that you're pulling the toes up towards the elbows, it makes it even more intense.
Mm-hmm.
And so when people do that, they kind of have a holy shit moment. This is suddenly, it's really hard when I felt like I could hold forever.
Yeah.
And so that's what I did with that client. If I do planks myself, that's how I will do them. And that's how I recommend most people do them.
Yeah. I think that's really helpful. And I think it's really good for people to kind of assess what position they're actually holding in the plank when they're saying, oh, I hit 1:30 today. Yeah, but how was it towards the end? And I think a really good tool for people can be to actually, if you're training on your own in the gym, is film yourself. And yeah, it's not for narcissistic reasons. And I think people kind of get afraid of doing it for that. But it's generally to check what you're doing, because I mean, even the most well-minded people can sometimes come out of form sometimes when they're fatiguing. So it's really good to just check that for yourself. So I think those are some really good tips. So thank you for that. Now,
oh, no, you're welcome.
I've read a few of your articles, and essentially about the fitness industry and how I like to call it the Tracy Anderson effect on how to tone, I put in inverted commas, you should be using light weights. And yeah, it was kind of the resurgence of this, of using light weights. And it's kind of accompanied by classes like Body Pump, which when I first started getting into weight training, I taught Body Pump for a couple of years. And I found it, you know, kind of a gateway to lifting weights. So, I mean, I could say the negatives of it, but it was a starting point for me, even though I got hideously injured by doing so. But what would you say has been a bit of an effect from the Tracy Anderson side of things? And if you don't know Tracy Anderson, she's a coach who says that you should be lifting light weights, for example. What would you say to people who have heard a lot of this about lifting light weights for progress, and they're actually a little bit scared to lift heavier?
So, I mean, if somebody truly wants to lift light weights, if that makes them happy, I say go for it. Mm-hmm. But for most people, they want to achieve better results lifting weights. I joke, weights that don't even, or that are so light they can fit into a handbag. You're probably not going to accomplish that much. And so Tracy, she had a quote. I can't remember her exact words, but she said women should not lift weights that are heavier than 3 to 5 pounds.
Yeah, that's the one.
And I was just thinking, okay, a lot of grocery bags weigh more than that. Children. Yeah. Picking up boxes. I mean, pretty much most activities you'll perform on a daily basis mm-hmm. require a greater amount of strength than that.
Picking up children, so, they get heavier as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, even that comment is doing such a disservice to people. It drove me crazy. I wrote an article about that. Mm-hmm. I ended up, it showed up in my Facebook memories recently, and I totally forgot about this. Yeah. A couple of years ago, and I don't know why I did. I used to follow her on Instagram, and I saw a video of her teaching a class.
Yeah.
And so she was just in the video, she was kind of watching herself in the mirror. She was doing the exercises. She was just staring at herself in the mirror, wasn't coaching anybody. So I was I was curious. So I wrote a really respectful, professional comment, and I didn't think she would respond because she has a lot of followers. And I just asked her, I can't remember my exact words, but I asked her why she wasn't coaching her clients. Mm. Wouldn't it be more effective to go around, coach, correct, provide appropriate cues?
Yeah.
And I think the way I worded it would have made her look bad if she did not respond. Mm-hmm. So she ended up replying, and she was mad. She did not like what I said. She didn't appreciate her exact words. She did not appreciate my harsh tone on her platform. She tried to out-science me, and she was saying there's a scientific reason for why she doesn't coach her clients and all this stuff. Exactly. And then she said she'd send me her two books, which she never did. Then I ended up being absolutely lambasted by a bunch of her followers.
Oh,
and they were telling me I didn't know anything and I should go to her classes. And then I had other people message me privately to thank me for saying something. And it was just this huge ordeal. And I mean, I probably wish I hadn't said anything, but she's just spreading such a, it's an insulting message to women,
mm-hmm.
telling them that they should not be lifting more than that, telling them her reason. Again, it's all about aesthetics. If you lift a certain way or mm-hmm. weights that are too heavy, you're going to get bulky.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the way she looks is the way everybody should look. We're all different. We all have our own goals, our own preferences. If somebody wants to look like Tracy, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
If somebody wants to put on more muscle, that's fantastic. So who is she or anybody to tell us how we should look or how we should be training?
Yes.
So that is kind of what irritated me more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
And also because it's just such an unhelpful message. People who train that way, they are going to get injured if they attempt to do something, picking up a kid or a suitcase or anything for that matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, to be honest, it's if you weren't to have said anything, if you didn't say anything, it's doing a service to the industry, to be honest, that you did, because these people really look up to them. And like you said, you got a lot of messages from people because people really look up to these, they idolize them. And the point is, it's an industry that is unregulated. So we don't have anyone going around going, this is wrong and this is bad for people. But so we have to be very careful of the message that is being promoted more. So while there is that, maybe I shouldn't have said something. Honestly, I think, to be honest, we do have to say things because it's for the good of the industry that things like this, they do get quietened down a little bit, because I don't think that's beneficial to the people in her class, and I don't think it's beneficial to the people who watch that on social media and think that is how fitness is.
See, that's why when I addressed her, I did so very respectfully. I was very curious and it was very professional, and I had actual questions.
Yeah.
Other people, and when I mentioned it on my own page, a lot of people commented, but then I had certain people go on to her page and just say, oh, like, you're a terrible coach or you're stupid and stuff like that. And I mean, that for me, that really upset me, because that is not helpful.
I can imagine.
No matter who you're addressing, whether or not it's true or untrue, you're not going to get anywhere by talking to somebody like that. So I was kind of annoyed about that. I just thought, if you're going to address somebody, do so respectfully, and there should be a purpose behind your comment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you have to, you can't just say, oh, this is stupid. You have to have a reasoning for saying it, and there's always a better way to say it. And like you said, you didn't say anything rude. You just said what the truth is, really. And people don't like that. They don't like being faced with their weaknesses. And what was that basically she wasn't tending to the people in the class, and that is more important than how you look. So, you know, it's one of those things, and I think it's very telling with coaches about where their morals are in terms of why they have a business, in that are you doing it for the good of helping people, like genuinely, or are you doing it for yourself? And it's very interesting to see. So I think you did the industry a service by doing that personally. I think so. So it's good.
Thank you.
I mean, strength training has a lot of benefits, obviously, from getting muscle and getting stronger and feeling good. And I tried to contextualize the other day exactly what I meant by the mental benefits of strength training. And I couldn't quite put my finger on it about why it makes you feel more confident. I mean, completing a program and completing tasks is naturally proven to build your confidence. But how would you say it affects people's confidence with strength training, the mental benefits of it?
I mean, it does depend on the individual, but being able to do something you weren't able to do before.
Mm-hmm.
But what I find with a lot of people, myself included,
mm-hmm.
having my efforts in the gym have a positive carryover to my everyday life.
Yeah.
I might be able to do something. And for example, even I went for a hike in the summer, and there was, whenever I see something like a rock or a tree, I always want to try to do pull-ups on it.
Yeah.
So there was this huge boulder, and I decided I wanted to try to do pull-ups on it. I did not think I was going to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And I was able to bang out some pull-ups on this rock.
That's
so again, cool. It was kind of something you do in the gym has a carryover to everyday life.
Yeah.
I also started climbing recently. And I mean, I'm not great. My technique is quite poor, but my strength is very good. So I've been able to do a lot of things that I did not expect I would be able to do because of my efforts in the gym.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. For a lot of other people, they might be dealing with discomfort. I'm always very cautious to use the word pain, but discomfort. And then all of a sudden they've gotten stronger. They've learned how to move properly. And all of a sudden they notice that their symptoms are much less severe. That can be very empowering for people. Other people, it might be they notice their appearance changes or it's changed. That might be empowering for them.
Mm-hmm.
So it totally depends on the individual. Me as well, when I was playing soccer, noticing how much stronger I felt on the field, how much better my performance was, that was hugely empowering for me. I mean, I could go on. There's so many other benefits.
Yes. Yeah. It does go on and on. That's the thing. Because I think when people start strength training, they don't realize that the benefits are going to be that vast. And it's not that you're just making it up. It is literally that it does carry on over to a lot of different parts of people's lives. I was going to say
one other thing before I forget. One of the huge things that is so empowering for people, at least in terms of the people that I work with, I tend to attract a lot of people who really want to learn.
Yeah.
I think I'm a pretty good teacher. I attract a lot of people who are genuinely interested in learning how to master the fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
So for people, when they become proficient in a movement, or even if they're a beginner and they suddenly start to notice that their form is improving,
mm-hmm.
or the exercise suddenly starts to feel easier, that is so empowering for people.
Yeah. Because it's not just, you know, essentially brute force lifting or weight. There is technique to it. There's so much more than just lifting and brute force. And when people realize there's a skill to something and they're learning something and it's more than that, then I think they're going to find it so much more enjoyable as well.
And yeah.
I think as well, if for people to reap the rewards of it, they really have to get themselves out there and try it and try new things. And I've always said, look, if you find that you try strength training and you don't like it and it's not for you, that's absolutely fine. But to try it in the first place, it does sometimes require some confidence in the gym to be trying some different exercises. What are some tips that you could give to people who are maybe in the gym, they feel a little bit self-conscious of themselves sometimes?
More about their ability or appearance or combo?
Combination, really, yeah.
I mean, it's easy for me to say, but when people are pretty much when we are anybody's in the gym,
mm-hmm.
they're not focusing on the people around them. They are totally fixated on what they're doing, whether or not they're self-conscious or they're just so focused on their training.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, so many people go to the gym and they might not necessarily think that they're strong enough, their technique's good enough, or they might not be overly confident with their appearance. So I try to tell people, again, easier said than done, but most people in the gym are so focused on themselves that they are not paying attention to what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing. I tell people to focus on what they can do versus on what they cannot do. So a lot of people, and that's also what I hugely believe in with my coaching.
Yeah.
I like to show the people that I work with what they are able to do versus kind of picking apart their deficiency, so to speak. And I would never use that word. A lot of coaches, they kind of pick people apart, show them what they cannot do. It shatters confidence. It is not empowering.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to show people, okay, this is what you're able to do. This is amazing. Let's start here. And then we'll kind of go from there. And then you keep progressing and you focus on their abilities. I keep saying it, but what they can do, you choose your words wisely, because obviously words can make or break a person, and you just build them up.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of my biggest things that I focus on when I'm coaching people, or in terms of even my posts. I kind of like to show people what they're able to do.
Yeah, and I think that is so important what you said about empowering language that you use with people. And while it's something that I've spoken about a lot with people recently is picking apart people's form and to pieces and saying you're doing this wrong, this wrong, this wrong, this wrong, and actually saying it can make the first experience of training and strength training actually a bad one. And it's so important that people have good experiences when they're training and building on them, like you say. And just touching on as well, what would you say are some quite like disempowering languages that people use about training as well? Is there any particular coaching cues that you've heard that you're not particularly fond of?
I mean, I used to use this word for what I changed. I mean, I've worked really hard to change my own, the vocabulary I'll use.
Yeah.
I don't like the word weak. I have a problem with weak. When people hear that, they think they're broken. They think they're hopeless. Yeah. I will not use the word weak. I do not like the word dysfunctional, mm-hmm. asymmetrical. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, there's so many that I don't like.
So many.
And I mean, people hear that and they think, oh my God, I am so messed up. There's no hope for me. And I mean, even me, I was in a car accident when I was 28. I wasn't injured at the time, but after the car accident, shortly after, I started experiencing all of these crazy full body symptoms. For 5 years, nobody could tell me what was wrong with me. And I bounced from doctor to doctor.
Yeah.
And I heard all of those words. I was so tight here. I was so weak. I was so dysfunctional.
Yeah.
I was told I would never be able to back squat again. I was told I would not be able to do so many things again.
Mm-hmm.
And hearing that, I mean, I was scared to so much as sneeze or breathe the wrong way. And they scared me out of doing everything. So once I finally found a physio who was able to tell me what was wrong with me, in two sessions, I made more progress than I did in over 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I had to work really hard to change my internal dialogue, my own beliefs about myself. But then that also had a huge carryover to my coaching. And I realized some of the words that I had been told I had been using with clients.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be so careful what you say. Other things, I'm getting sidetracked, but form.
That's fine.
There's no universal standard for perfect form.
Absolutely.
Everybody is different. So trying to pigeonhole everybody into performing exercises the same way, insisting that everybody should be squatting the same way, deadlifting the same way, is not correct. That's also harmful.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody I know, or insisting that people should all have the same body positioning. I mean, everybody is different. Structurally, we're different.
Yeah.
The way we move is different. So insisting that everybody should look and move the same way, that can be extremely harmful. Somebody I know, it was a Facebook post that I read. She mm-hmm. was in some sort of class and the instructor was insisting her ribs needed to be a certain way, even though this person knows her body really well, and said if she does that, she gets severe migraines.
Yeah.
So the instructor insisted she had her ribs in a certain position, and lo and behold, she got a migraine.
Yeah.
And this instructor, somebody who didn't really necessarily, or she has her own bias and assumes everybody should look the same way, they should mm-hmm. move the same way. That's doing a huge disservice to our clients. So we have to treat everybody as individuals, figure out what works and feels best for each person,
mm-hmm.
and not have a cookie cutter mindset or approach to our training, or I mean, even the words that we use with our clients.
Yeah, you have to be so, so careful with what you say and what you do, even like mention to people in passing, because people really, they respect us as coaches, so they're going to take on, especially in a class environment, if someone's giving their attention to 30 people and you're given one comment the entire class, you're going to act upon that. And the coach is essentially looking at all these different people doing different things. And what do you think classes can have a great effect on people's lives in terms of the community, getting a solid routine, the sociable effects of classes. However, the negative effects, I would say, probably, you may agree, is that there's not enough individual attention. There's not enough looking at what are people doing individually. So, I mean, what's your take on it?
I mean, I used to teach classes, but
now
I won't work with more than 3 to 4 people at once, just because for me, I absolutely want, especially if they're doing higher risk movements,
mm-hmm.
or if they're movements that people don't really understand how to perform. If you're working with people who are more beginner or intermediate,
mm-hmm.
it is impossible in classes to make sure that people are doing things properly.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if somebody is going to be going to a class, I mean, even if I was teaching a class, which I probably won't because that's not really what I'm into, they would be doing lower risk exercises that are not technically demanding.
Mm-hmm.
You can't teach a class unless everybody, they're extremely advanced, extremely technically proficient, So you can kind of go around and just really micromanage.
Yeah.
But even then, I mean, as an instructor, you need to make sure your students or the people in the class are doing things correctly. If you can't enforce proper form, people should not be performing technically demanding or higher risk movements. And I mean, they often do.
Yeah.
And I see this all the time. And it's so, I just have to put my blinders on if I'm in a gym and I see classes and this is going on because I want to jump in and correct people.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think people obviously think that, you know, they're in safe hands with a coach and in the class, and there's some very good ones. But obviously, if you do get maybe the fundamentals in place before you go to these classes, there's a lot to be said for that as well.
Yeah.
So that you can build from there, and then you can use your own prior knowledge and say, oh, actually, I think I'm supposed to be doing this. And then you feel a little bit more empowered and not so reliant on a coach as well in a class environment, which I think is important as well. I think as well, from that, with online coaching, it's a very different way of coaching in that you have to be pay even more mind to the words that you use so that people can visualize something and use it correctly so that they can perform an exercise in the way that you ideally want them to do it.
Yeah.
How would you think that's crossovered from real life? I say real life, it is real life online, but training for someone one-on-one to do a pull-up and to your pull-up program, for example.
So, I mean, I have a lot of experience coaching in person. Mm-hmm. I have been doing a lot more online work over the years. So what I do, I mean, I know not everybody, they're not comfortable filming themselves, but mm-hmm. with my clients, I highly encourage them to film at least one set, especially when they're first starting out, one set per exercise. I say they're working like they're probably heaviest weight or their hardest working set.
Yeah.
So I can then coach them, cue them, correct them as I would an in-person client.
Yeah.
So I have some people learn best by watching, some people learn best by listening, others by reading instructions.
Mm-hmm.
So I provide everything. I have extremely thorough written descriptions. I have videos, and then I do allow my clients to film themselves, send it to me so I can then provide feedback.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that works really well for a lot of people. Obviously, again, it depends. Some people, they will send me videos weekly. Others, I might not hear from them for a month, even though I'm bugging them to send me videos. And that's what they prefer. So everybody does have a preferred coaching style.
Yeah, exactly. I like to nag as well about the videos a lot because it is the best way for us to see what's going on. But I think it is a lot of the time people do find it difficult to like put the phone in the gym and put it somewhere and they're like, oh, are people looking at what I'm doing? But it's so, so important, so, so helpful for them to get the most out of their coaching, to be honest. So it's well worth
it. Yeah. I mean, I film myself. I mean, I do post exercises for features and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I will often film most of the videos that I take. I never post because I do it to assess my own form and coach myself the way I would coach my own clients.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I was even breaking down my trap bar deadlifts last week, mm-hmm. and I ended up catching something so subtle. Mm-hmm. But that was making a huge difference. And if I didn't have my camera, I would not have caught that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as well, you can apply your own coaching that you to other people. And you take if you look at it like in a completely unbiased way, which you can do with a video and just look at your own form, then you can really work on it. And it's nice to see surprises from yourself sometimes. It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it means that you're... Always keeping an eye on what you're doing as well. And obviously you want to walk the talk with your training, which is really, really important to lead by example, I suppose, as well for people.
I mean, if you're a coach and you're making glaring mistakes in your own training, I mean, if you're posting videos and your form's not great, or if you then see coaches and they post videos of their clients, and I mean, everybody has different form.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know people's starting point. We don't know their biomechanics. We don't know their past injuries. So you can't really judge a person based on one video.
Yeah.
But if every single client of that coach has the same breakdown in form, to me, that speaks volumes about the coach and their coaching.
Absolutely. Absolutely, because it's imprinting one specific biased idea onto everyone.
Yeah.
And it's not what coaching is, essentially. And it's tailoring, well, it's listening a lot of the time. It's listening to people and what they need in their past history, and you can't decide for them what they're going to get out of their training, which is important.
And you need to figure out what works best for them, for that individual. And I mean, say I have a preferred training style, I'm not going to make all my clients, and I had a bit of a rant about this, I forget when it was, certain people with certain backgrounds I find are more susceptible to this as coaches.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll name a bunch of different backgrounds. It applies to everybody. You have somebody who's a soccer player, for example.
Yeah.
I'm not going to make all of my clients train like soccer players.
Mm-hmm.
Runners. I know a lot of coaches, or I've worked with a lot of coaches in the past. They're runners.
Mm-hmm.
They make 100% of their clients. And a lot of these people are non-runners, do their running specific training,
mm-hmm.
which is often just stuff on BOSUs or exercises that pretty much have Tracy Anderson weights.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a lot of people do that, or bodybuilders, they might try to make all of their clients train like bodybuilders.
Yes. Yeah.
That's if you're a bodybuilder, that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, if you're not, that's not helping your client.
No. Absolutely. And I think when I started coaching people, and I've said it before, I'm not afraid to say that I did coach people in a very bodybuilding-esque style when it wasn't necessarily right for them. However, I just thought that was the right way to coach people. I just thought
that was just it.
And it's only with experience and then going, I was wrong, and learning more as a coach that you kind of move past that. And I find it very interesting to see that as well, that does it apply to the coach's background, that they're there and then impressing that off on clients as well.
I was so guilty of insisting that everybody looked the same way when they were performing that certain exercises.
Yes.
I was so guilty of that. But then the more I learned about biomechanics, obviously differences in body type,
mm-hmm.
even confidence, experience.
Mm-hmm.
I learned so many different variations for the same movement. Mm-hmm. I learned that there's so many variations in form.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not one perfect, I mean, there's no such thing as perfect form.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But there's such a thing as very good or optimal form for that person.
Yeah.
So I really learned that, because I mean, I did kind of have that cookie cutter mindset where I thought everybody should look and move the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, even in terms of people standing when they squat, some mm-hmm. people feel a little bit better. For me, for example, I feel best when my feet are about hip width apart in the heel, mm-hmm. shoulder width apart in the toes. So I have a slight point out of my feet.
Yeah.
That feels great for me. Some people feel better when they go a little bit wider. Some people might feel a little bit better when they're closer. Some people might have an asymmetrical foot stance.
Mm-hmm.
And me, I used to always insist that everybody had the same, like that their feet were symmetrical.
Yeah.
And even in my own training, I would do that.
Yeah.
I now feel a tiny bit better, and it's very subtle,
mm-hmm.
when my right foot is pointing out a tiny bit more than my left.
Yes.
And for me, that is my normal. Dean Somerset talks about this a lot. A lot of other people talk about this. Mm-hmm. So coaches who try to insist that we all, for example, foot stance, we all adopt the same foot stance,
mm-hmm.
that's doing a huge disservice to people. We don't know about their hip structure. We don't know about, I mean, there's so much that we don't know. So it's really cool. I mean, learning this years later.
Yeah, I think it is really cool, because the more experience you have, you can then look at the way someone moves and say, oh, have you tried this or have you tried that? And it's not this or that. It's kind of like trying a few different things. And then you see some kind of like correlations with people who have a certain like hip mobility that one way works. And it's really interesting. There's no one size fits all, though. But like, I find that really interesting that your like squat stance isn't asymmetrical and you kind of promote that as well. It's really, really cool, because I think people get really wound up about that.
Yeah. I mean, if it works for somebody, I kind of, when I'm with somebody, I tell them, or I ask them to show me how they normally squat,
mm-hmm.
and then I'll see how they move when they go into their squat. Then I'll kind of play around with different foot positions, And then you can kind of tell what works and feels best based on what you can see, but then, of course, based on what they tell you.
Yes.
So it is trial and error. It's a team effort.
Yeah.
And, I mean, again, there's no one-size-fits-all approach, and it might even vary on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's true. And I think it's very much like you say about how someone goes into the squat as well, and they're like, oh, if they're like, oh, I know that this sometimes hurts me, then they're going to automatically go into it in a very different way to someone who knows that it's going to be fine. And so like you say, day to day, it can be very different as well. And like you say, it's having that the mental approach to it as well, and like talking to them and seeing how they interpret the movement and how they feel about it as well. So like I said earlier, I've begun your pull-up program, and I'm finding it hugely helpful. And would you like to talk to the listeners a little bit more about your pull-up program?
Sure. So, I mean, it took me a really, really long time to create the program, the main program. I mean, it's very comprehensive. It's 160 pages long. So, I mean, that right away kind of speaks volumes as to how detailed it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's four phases long. Each phase, I'm addressing questions that people have often asked me. Each phase is 4 to 8 weeks long, but you go at your own pace.
Mm-hmm.
It covers the entire body because the pull-up, I talked about it earlier, the pull-up is a full body movement. A lot of people, they treat it purely as an upper body exercise.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes it that much tougher for them to achieve their first pull-up ever, a new PR, doing weighted pull-ups. So my program covers the full body. Obviously, I address pull-up specific technique, and I have a lot of different progressions, I should say,
mm-hmm.
that will help somebody be able to go from hanging from the bar to eventually being able to perform a full pull-up.
Yeah.
I have a lot of exercises that address lumbopelvic stability. So, for example, people like the core mm-hmm. strength. So there's that. I have exercises that teach you how to improve the controlled movement of the shoulders and shoulder blades,
mm-hmm.
because that's an integral component of the pull-up. I have other exercises that address horizontal pulling strength. So, for example, a lot of different rowing variations. I have exercises that address pressing, largely because these exercises, I have a lot of different landmine variations. They address lumbopelvic stability as well.
Yeah.
So these exercises, they provide a huge bang for your buck. I have exercises for the glutes, because if you're able to keep your hips in a more stable position, it helps make your path to the bar a lot more shorter and efficient, and it makes you much less prone to pulling dead weight.
Mm-hmm.
And I even have some exercises for the lower body. I mean, this is probably the least significant component, but if you're able to keep your lower body in a rigid position, again, it makes you less prone to swinging and less prone to moving dead weight.
Yeah.
And then in terms of the program, every exercise, it has a very, very thorough written description. It has a photo, it has a video, and then you get your own charts. You can print them out. And then what I did, so that was my original pull-up program that I released over a year ago. So this year I upgraded it. I added a 40-page bonus section. I added a really comprehensive section on exercises that improve grip strength, because it is an integral component of the pull-up.
Mm-hmm.
While I do have exercises for grip strength in the main program, I wanted to provide a lot more. So I have that. I added in a really, really thorough section on shoulder health and exercises that address control mobility. So again, being able to control the movement of the shoulders and shoulder blades, but then also exercises that help improve stability. So when the shoulders and shoulder blades are in a fixed position. So I have 8 exercises for that. I have exercises that help improve elbow health. Because, I mean, even for me, this was a game changer for me. Mm-hmm. Last year, before my launch, I had been doing my own, like the regular pull-up training, in addition to shooting so many videos for the program. So my one elbow did get a little bit cranky. I ignored it, and I only did something about it when it started interfering with my daily living. So I implemented one of my good friends, she showed me a few exercises, and I had some of my own. Adding those in, a week to 2 weeks, my elbows felt better than ever. So those are in the program. And then I also have a very, very basic kind of a beginner section on breathing and bracing. So it's really thorough.
It's so thorough. And like you say about breathing and bracing, it's something that is so often overlooked in terms of like that foundation of building from there upwards. And it's just the little tweaks in it that I found really, really helpful. Like when you say, oh, okay, flex your feet. And that was a massive game changer for me because it meant that I could hold that rigid position so much better. And it's really important, those details in the program that I found personally really helpful. And obviously other people might find something else from the program that they find a bit of a game changer as well. So Heidi, I mean, I've tried it, so I highly recommend it. So there you go. So if people want to follow your content and find some things you've spoken about today very helpful, where can people find you and where can people find your pull-up program?
So my main website is MeganCallowayFitness.com. I have all my links to my social media on there, but you can follow me on Facebook. You can follow me on Instagram. For my pull-up program, it's ultimatepullups.com, and that's where you can learn more about the pull-up program or buy it if you're interested. So I think those are probably the best locations to find me.
Awesome. Great. Yeah, and you've got a wealth of content online that's really, really helpful about a lot of the different things we've spoken about today. So to be honest, if you search online for Megan, you'll be able to find some of the really helpful things she's been writing about as well. So highly recommend people do so. So I do hope that people who've listened today have found it helpful. Now, if you have found it helpful, please do make sure you share the podcast in some way. And it's in as much as it sounds like a shameless plug, it's more so that we do know that what we're trying to share with people is helpful. And the more we can share a little bit more of evidence-based ideas and strength training ideas, the more people hear about it, really. So please do give it a share. And so Megan, thank you so, so much for coming onto the podcast today and having a bit of a chat with me. It's been absolutely lovely talking with you.
Thank you for having me on the show.